This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, smash the piggy bank of language to count the coins within. Coming up in today's show...
You know, people's ovaries are not actually exploding because Benedict Cumberbatch has sort of winked at a camera.
Let's prepare ourselves with a little light word history. I was looking up the word broad, as in an immoral or ribald woman, and as is often the case with slang words, its origins are annoyingly inconclusive. It might have been suggesting that the woman in question's pelvis was broad, or it might have been an abbreviation of a broad wife, that is, a woman who was away from her husband, and thus available to other men. But here's a curious fact. Because broad was so insulting to women, in the 1960s, the athletic event then known as the broad jump was renamed the long jump. And yet slag heaps are still called slag heaps. Very inconsistent. On with the show. Remember when the word viral only meant something bad? From its ancient Proto-Indo-European root, virus turned up in many languages to mean poison or slime. However, in my lifetime, the word viral has evolved from describing diseases to things that would scupper your computer to your office's lip dub of Call Me Maybe getting viewed 14 million times on YouTube since yesterday. It's hard to identify the exact person who coined this latter linguistic mutation, but by the mid-1990s, people studying and writing about marketing were propagating the use of viral to mean rapidly spreading popularity.
Viral as a metaphor, I find it to be wrong.
There's Roman Mars, but not the Roman Mars familiar to you as the host of 99% Invisible, but the parallel universe Roman Mars, who didn't go into audio eventually to become our Radiotopian overlord, but instead stuck with his PhD in genetics.
It's bad. It's like a bad metaphor in a lot of ways, because often the immediacy and efficacy of viruses means that they phase out even quicker. And so the desire for virality is weird, considering that really good viruses, you don't notice really good viruses. You know, like a lot of our DNA is probably of viral origin, and we don't even know it.
Not being noticed would be the opposite of success for viral web content, and while many virals happen by accident, I doubt Catbin Woman anticipated millions of people would see a video of her crime of throwing away her cat into a rubbish bin. All over the internet, people are trying to make content go viral. And of course, one of the world's most successful generators of viral content is BuzzFeed. Every day, its staff members churn out hundreds of articles, lists, quizzes, and videos to be disseminated by social media users. And them doing so is probably just down to whether or not they're grabbed by the headline. So how do BuzzFeed capture someone's attention in just a few words? To find out, I met up with Tom Phillips, editorial director at BuzzFeed UK, and what happened next will blow your mind.
I mean, I hate blow your mind, as we don't tend to use blow your mind too much. There was this sort of headline style that was all over the internet for a long time, sort of recently, which was the curiosity gap headline. The stereotype of it is that this young boy with something slightly wrong with him was bullied, and then he decided to stand up for himself. You won't believe what happened next. That was a successful approach for many sites for a long time. Now, still one of my most read posts is one where the one time I tried it out. I just wanted to see if it would work. By and large, we reject the curiosity gap approach. We're much more in favour of actually saying the thing that happened and the headline being informative. Even if you don't actually click through to the story and read it all, the headline should actually inform you rather than tease you or trick you or anything like that.
Yes, set you up for disappointment.
Exactly.
When you believe what happened next.
Exactly. One thing that we do, which I think people often confuse with that curiosity gap stuff, is we do use hyperbole quite a bit. Not so much on the news reporting side, because that doesn't really work with news values, but on the entertainment side, on the classic BuzzFeed is, like, Beyonce has just released a new song, I'm dead. I died right there. I'm dead now. And everybody in that audience knows about that and understands that this is hyperbole and that, you know, these people have not actually died. And, you know, people's ovaries are not actually exploding because Benedict Cumberbatch has sort of winked at a camera. You can actually have some fun with sort of ones that are a bit more sort of laid back. Like, there was one post that did incredibly well, which was just about sort of the scale of the solar system and the universe and things like that, and it was just sort of 26 pictures that will make you reevaluate your place in the world, or something like that. It was weirdly sort of underplayed. Maybe a year, 2 years ago, like, that would have been a will blow your mind kind of approach.
The opposite of hyperbole is litotes, the use of understatement for rhetorical effect. Whenever you say something like, for example, "Yeah, the view from the top of the Empire State Building's not bad," or you refer to a raging hottie as a bit of all right, congratulate yourself for your use of litotes, building on thousands of years of literary tradition. And maybe, if people are becoming desensitized to the hysterical pitch of headlines, litotes will be the next trend in viral content.
I think there's going to be a natural ebb and flow of this. People will start to associate sort of more hyperbolic headlines with the likelihood of disappointment at the far end, and so understated can then sort of rise up. And then once sort of understated takes over, then there's a gap in the market. There's an ecological niche for people being hyperbolic again, and they'll get success, and it'll be a sort of a constant ebb and flow of, like, hyperbole versus understatement. And somewhere we've got a spreadsheet of superlatives and words that look like alternatives, so that we don't keep going to sort of, like, jaw-dropping or, like, amazing, the best X you will see today, that kind of thing. Because while hyperbole is part of the language of a large part of our audience, and they understand that, it has to be inventive, it has to be creative, and it has to not be bullshit. It has to be something that everybody gets instinctively. And so you've got to keep playing with it. And if there is a glut of amazings on the homepage, then it just, you look dumb. And so you do sort of very deliberately try to sort of play around with the language and just try things out. I mean, that's the other thing about what we do, is that a lot of what we do is experimental. Basically, every post you're going, like, okay, we know that something like this does well. Maybe if there's a little twist on it, if you phrase it slightly differently, might it do better? Will it do worse? All that sort of thing. We have a data team who are very, very good, and they actually sort of do deep analysis of you know, what works, what doesn't, why people click, why people share, all that sort of thing. But a lot of these experiments we do are a lot more sort of ad hoc and slightly loose, and you never quite know. You can never be entirely certain. It's like, you know, did that phrasing actually help it, or is it just, once again, the random fluctuations of the internet? The internet will always surprise and horrify you, and there's a very common thing of you just going, like, internet, you liked this stuff last week, why don't you like it now?
Because it's capricious, Tom.
Exactly. The internet is a capricious and willful beast.
Can't you keep up with that?
You feel your way through and start to get a sense of that kind of phrasing is popular right now, that kind of phrasing resonates with people. And then after a while, it'll stop resonating and you move on to something else.
The life cycle of a particular word or phrase is hastened by its own success. The more it is shared, the more people see it, the more sites copy it, and the quicker everyone is sick of it. But some terms don't seem to burn out too quickly.
The word actually, just adding that to otherwise innocuous headlines, seemed for a while, I don't know if it's still happening, but it seemed for a while to definitely make them better. Like, so, you know, like simple quizzes, like, rather than, you know, which kind of Beyoncé are you? Which kind of Beyoncé are you actually?
Because you've been labouring under a misapprehension for all this time.
We will test out different headlines for pieces and sort of see if any of them do better. We had a series of posts recently on why living in a place will ruin you for life. The whole point being is these are just very pretty pictures of a certain area, and the whole point is, like, you know, it will never be as good again living anywhere else. And ruin you for life was really, really successful for a while, and then until recently it seems that reasons you should never leave place has kind of sort of come up. Has come up behind it. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it is interesting actually that the ruin you for life framing was successful, because we find the one thing that rarely works is any sort of level of sarcasm or irony, which is very interesting given that sarcasm and irony are, like, almost the default modes of discussion on many, many parts of the internet. But weirdly, it doesn't seem that using them in headlines makes them go particularly viral. It's an interesting thing to me. Like, we've tried it many, many times, and it's always been the case that be straightforward, this is what this is, headline will do better than the one that sort of turns it round and sort of inverts your expectations and does clever stuff with it and, like, sort of is sort of slightly distanced and a little bit arch.
Maybe people out of context won't necessarily register the double meanings.
Exactly. I think this is the... this is the point, is that when you're in the article, you may get it, but a lot of people won't come to the article because they think that it's...
mean.
Yeah, they think, not all alternatively positive about something you shouldn't be positive about, you know, like, but they either won't go into it because they don't get it in the first place, or once they're out of it, they will be worried about sharing it because they think that other people will misinterpret them.
But why are people gripped by the urge to share this kind of content rather than just reading it and moving on?
A lot of what we do is based around identity and how people express their identity.
So you're providing people the tools to set out their stall.
Exactly. And that can be, you know, from sort of the classic BuzzFeed posts that, you know, sort of 27 things that only people who come from Des Moines will understand.
What's with all the odd numbers, Tom?
We generally find that non-round numbers... do well. It seems we get into a terrible fuss if we're sort of creating a numbered list post and we end up on like sort of 20 things because we're like, no, it's a round number. The odd numbers versus even numbers thing, we have completely evidence-free discussions in the office about the idea that like sort of even numbers are better for nice things and odd numbers are better for sort of weird, strange or nasty things. Basically, it's people will sort of say like, yeah, I did that one post that was odd numbered and that did fairly well, and then that post that even numbered, that didn't do so well, so I'm going to invent an entire theory of mind to explain the random fluctuations of the internet.
So even when you're an organisation dedicated to producing viral content, success is still largely trial and error. Something that seems to be fairly consistent, however, is the notion that audio does not go viral. Photos, written posts and videos, even videos with no visual interest, go viral all the time. But aside from recordings of customers' frustrated calls to Comcast, audio alone rarely does. Well, Roman Mars takes exception to that too.
I think it's dumb. Podcasts, that's really viral in the good sense. So like... it's about a decision, like, of what type of virus you want to be. My type of virus is the one that you sign up for it once and you have it forever. I'm like the herpes, and they want us to be Ebola. And I don't get why you'd want to be Ebola. Ebola gets eradicated. Ebola doesn't spread far. Like, I'd rather be herpes.
Strong message to end on. Before we go, your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is bavardage, noun, rare noun, meaning idle gossip. Try using it in an email today. If you want, you can get in touch with me by seeking out Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks to all of you who've already been in contact since the show launched, especially Benjamin, who after the last episode about bras tweeted to tell me that his great-grandmother refused to wear a bra on the grounds that they were, quote, evil like the transistor radio. Perhaps she'd been picking up radio waves in her underwires? This show resides at theallusionist.org. Thanks to Tom Phillips and Roman Mars. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, and there'll be another one along in 2 weeks' time.